saw on MSNBC and recently pulled from an article from CBS. This was from October 19th of 2018. And many of you may have already heard this story. In Lamoille County, Vermont, everywhere you look, bursts of Lucy Rogers green and Zach Mayo red, white and blue. "We don't need as much government," Zach said. "He's the Republican. She's the Democrat. I'm pretty centrally focused on health care," Lucy said. "They're aggressively competing for a state house seat. Both have visited or plan to visit every single home in their district, all 2,000 plus. The locals say they've never seen anything like it. But this highly competitive race took a dramatic turn recently. During their debate, the candidates asked for a few minutes at the end. They stood up from their tables and began moving the furniture. No one knew what was coming. Indeed, what happened at the local library that night was totally unexpected and unprecedented in modern American politics. Political rivals Lucy Rogers and Zach Mayo shocked voters by coming together for a duet. Because we asked them if we could have a few minutes at the end of to play the duet, Lucy said, it strikes a chord. Zach said, to say to the world that this is a better way. With that, the Democrat and Republican united in perfect harmony. There weren't enough tissues to go around. It marked the turning point for us, one person said. It gave me a lot of hope, said another. The song they played that night, and for us after, is about longing for a less competitive society. Their rendition so resonated with folks in northern Vermont, CBS News actually saw houses that had signs for both candidates, a clear indication that the winner of this race had already been decided, a landslide victory for civility. I originally conceived the idea to give this sermon because I had a few things I wanted to get off my chest to alleviate the guilt I experienced in my liberal adulthood about things I did when I was younger. I attributed my guilt-causing behavior to being raised a conservative. I wrote my original sermon in one sitting. It was basically the story of my life. But as I read it back, it occurred to me that many of the things that happened in my life really had, on the surface, little to do with my family being mostly conservatives. Much of it could probably just be explained by the fact that there is severe mental illness in my family. That is when I really began doing the research on what exactly is a conservative and how their ideology differs from that of a liberal. Ask anybody what the definition of a conservative is, and you will get a wide variety of answers. It's a loaded question. For instance, the Merriam-Webster Dictionary's definition of a conservative is a person who is averse to change and holds to traditional values and attitudes, typically in relation to politics. And the definition of a right-winger is a person who supports or belongs to the conservative or reactionary section of a political party or system. Regardless of the ideology you identify with, you need to realize that it is not a dichotomy. You cannot fit people neatly into boxes that are labeled conservative or liberal. I, for example, still have many beliefs that one would consider conservative, but I identify as a liberal. If you try to judge the political conservative of the 80s based on the current political climate and situation we are facing, you would be comparing apples to oranges. Today, there are people on both sides of the political spectrum who are so far right or so far left that all they can feel is that they are right and the other is wrong. This is closed-mindedness regardless of what side you identify with. Some people are so close to trying to understand people who are not like them that they hate those people. And hate is a bad thing, regardless of what you believe in. Back when I was being raised by conservatives, I don't even know if I ever heard any of my parents state that another person was bad because of their liberal views. In fact, I didn't even understand the concept of liberal versus conservative until I was able to remove myself from the situation. As I look back on my life, I see that my mom's views were heavily influenced by the views of the husband she happened to be married to at the time. I'd even go so far as to say that between husbands, she had some pretty liberal views. One of her views was that the government and big business were evil. I can see where she would get that idea. When she was single and had to find ways to care for her children, she reached out for help and was denied for government benefits on the basis that her part-time waitress job was bringing in too much money for us to qualify. She rebelled against this, in my opinion, in the worst way possible. My mom had the problem of having no filters, and she would tell my sister and I everything that was going on in her life, and in exchange, we did the same. I remember my mom once telling my sister and I that if we wanted nice stuff, we would have to steal it. Before Walmart, there was a big box store chain called Gibson's in the Midwest. She would actually beam with pride when we would come home with new clothes, shoes, and jewelry that we had successfully stolen from the store. It became a game to us, and it was great to have my mother's approval. My mother was married 3 times, and the 3rd one stuck. They were married for 25 years, and only finally divorced about 8 years ago. I feel that my mom had been so influenced by my second stepfather's right-wing attitude that she began to see the world only in the way that he wanted her to see it. I don't speak to my mom, and haven't for about 8 years. I don't know what her views are, that now that she is free from his views, but I have taken a peek at her Facebook page and can see that she still has a lot of conservative beliefs. Sadly, I also look back and see that I have repeated those patterns myself. In an attempt to get away from my parents, I ended up marrying men who were just like my second stepfather. I married 3 of them. My 4th husband is actually the first liberal I ever dated. So what were conservative values when I was growing up in the Midwest during the Reagan-Bush era? This was at the time such a conservative era that all throughout the 80s, almost every state in the U.S. was a red state. I happened to live in one of those states. As I explain this, please keep in mind that times change, and some of the stories I could tell you would mortify you. But at the time they occurred, it was quite acceptable. Things change, and I believe you shouldn't judge rashly what somebody did in the past when the thing they did was perfectly acceptable at the time, without giving them a chance to explain themselves. Some of the things I did growing up, and I now know were wrong, were okay to me at the time because the people around me encouraged that behavior. Often what I did was an attempt to impress a man, whether that man be my second stepfather, who I secretly hated but outwardly tripped over myself to please, which I now believe was Stockholm Syndrome, or men I desperately needed to take me away from the situation. My ultimate goal was to please them. One of the conservative values at the time was clear boundaries between parents and children. The children in the household understood that the man was the ultimate authority and what they were allowed to do. I had those boundaries when I would go to visit my father on vacations. I understood that my father made the rules and that there was no argument with him. He was the boss and I was to listen. This was a sharp contrast to living with my mother, as there were absolutely no boundaries with her. In fact, there were many times I felt more like her mother than her daughter. My second stepfather, on the other hand, attempted to demand respect from me. We had a love-hate relationship. He was only 8 years older than me, and I was the one who introduced him to my mom in the first place. I now believe that if he'd attempted to earn my respect rather than demand it, he may have gotten it. This stepfather, who I would later distinguish from my biological father by calling him my dad and referring to my biological dad as my father, eventually ended up getting my respect because I had been taught that a woman needed a man in her life who made the rules. When I was between husbands, he was the one I would look to for guidance. One of the most horrible things my stepfather taught me was disrespect for people who weren't like me. And not just passive disrespect, but downright confrontations with people. For instance, when I lived in Colorado in the 90s, it was the first time I realized that he was a racist. And by being an extension of him, I was too. We lived in an area very concentrated with Mexican migrant workers. My stepdad worked on a series of dairy farms in the area. He worked with many migrant workers. I'd heard him say things about them, not just behind their backs, but to their faces, that now sicken me. I can now look back and imagine the way those migrant workers must have felt. But back then, they were just people from another place that I was told didn't belong there. My stepfather was a hateful person. He hated everybody who wasn't the same color as him, whether that be a Mexican or a person of any other ethnicity. The value I noticed and could only later identify as conservative were that men were in charge and the woman's job was to stay home and have children. My mom learned from a very early age that the goal for a woman was to find a husband who would provide for her needs, and in exchange, she provided the cooking and cleaning and the raising of the children. I don't remember my mom having a job when she was married to my father, but when they divorced when I was 7, she was faced with the realization that she had to work to provide for her daughters. She also quickly found another man to marry who was expected to provide for her, and her children's needs. The only problem was that the second man she chose was an alcoholic who abused her. Her third husband was no better. But my mother was raised to believe that you had to have a man in your life. She also realized during the 3 years between husband number 2 and husband number 3 that being a woman in that era didn't offer much room for advancement in employment. She had only gone to the 8th grade in school and was not what one would consider book smart. She worked a variety of part-time jobs as a waitress or a cashier at a convenience store to support her children. But in the end, I think she admitted defeat and began to unconsciously search for somebody else to take care of her. So how did I get from there to here? A series of unfortunate events in my 30s found me in desperate need of escape. My upbringing provided me with no healthy examples of how to raise my own children, and history repeated itself. When I was 13, my mother, who had been husbandless for about a year, was deemed unfit, and my older sister and I were sent to foster homes. My 2 younger sisters were living with my father at the time. My older sister loved her new home and began to flourish. I, on the other hand, ended up in a home I hated. I think it was because, between us 2 girls, I was the most like my mother. It wasn't the home that was bad. It was my refusal to fit into it. They were a good family, but they didn't let me get away with the stuff my mom had. I eventually returned to my mother, but my sister never did. She went on to college, where she was pursuing her bachelor's degree in forensic psychology when her life was tragically cut short at the age of 19 by a drunk driver. It was a horrible irony. She'd managed to get to escape that life, and now that's how her life was ended. Fast forward to the year 2000, and I'm the mother of two small children. I have just escaped an abusive relationship. I married a man who was a carbon copy of my stepfather. He was abusive to my children and me. But the reason I stayed with him is that I asked myself, which is worse for a child, having an abusive father or having no father? I chose abusive because I was raised to believe that a woman was required to have a man and that a child was required to have a father, even if that father abused them. I ended up in a women's shelter in Colorado. It was in the early 2000s, and the environment I was in was much more liberal. During a women's meeting, I would say something so ironic that I would regret saying it for the rest of my life. A lot of women in the meetings would complain about how the government wasn't going far enough to help them get out and stay out of their abusive situations. I said that I was the poster child for how things were supposed to work in the government. I was just accepted into low-income housing, I was getting food stamps and a welfare check, and I found government programs that helped me get a job and even paid for me to go to college. Within 3 years, I found myself back in my mother's situation. I had met another man who was like my stepfather. And when we broke up because of the abuse, the state stepped in and took custody of my children. What I went through in the 2 years I fought for custody of them could be the subject of a whole other sermon. But I will tell you that I, like my mother so many years before, admitted defeat and walked away from the whole situation. I was not mentally healthy enough to fight anymore. I had developed a drug problem, and that is when I was introduced to Narcotics Anonymous. I don't think I could have gotten through those years without them. But after 2 years of fighting, I could clearly see that the state had no intentions of ever returning my children to me. My baby sister, who, as I said, was raised by my father, had married a man from Rutland and had moved here a few years before. She offered me her spare room. I actually ended up taking a detour and landed in New York, where I would spend two years with a conservative man who showed me the good side of the political spectrum. He was a good, honest man with good, honest parents, and for the first time I've ever really experienced part of what was my definition of a normal family. But in the end, we were just incompatible. It was then that I took my sister up on her spare room. My baby sister was living in Vermont, and my older sister followed her shortly, but my second youngest sister followed shortly thereafter. My baby sister had married a nice, respectable man from a nice, respectable family, and they had two children. I felt like I needed a church family. None of my parental figures had any interest in religion, but I had sought it out on my own at an early age, I believe as a way to escape from my situation. I had attended several evangelical churches, but just didn't feel right there. I started doing research to try to figure out just what Christian church I belonged in. I soon discovered that I didn't belong in any of them. I soon discovered that I was not a Christian at all. I began to be very interested in world religions. I was reading the Rutland Herald one day and noticed there was a theology book group at the Rutland UU Church. I'd heard of the UU Church when I lived back west. I attended an Archives Anonymous meeting in the UU Church in Cheyenne, Wyoming, where I lived for a short time. I had met a transgender woman there and developed a close friendship with her. We had a lot in common. She convinced me to attend a few services there. I really liked it, but when I moved to New York, I started going to my boyfriend's church, which was a Nazarene church. When I moved to Vermont, I had forgotten the experience in the UU church in Wyoming. I was still living in my sister's spare room and didn't even have an apartment of my own when I walked into that book group. The people I met there were some of the very same people who are sitting in these pews today. It didn't take long to realize that this was where I belonged. The reason was because this was the first group of people I'd ever been in the same room with who could talk intelligently and without bias about topics that would surely have left my family in a yelling match as to who was right and who was wrong. This group, which included a woman who is now my best friend and has been since that day in 2007, was able to open-mindedly discuss topics that at first made me uncomfortable, not because of the topics themselves, but because of the way I'd seen my family and peers handle the subject when they were mentioned in previous years. There was a time when across the street from this very church, there was a Subway sandwich shop. I had parked in the church parking lot to walk over and have lunch there that one day. That's when I saw the banner on the side of the church. It was a sign that had pictures of people who were practicing different world religions. It said, "All are welcome here." I came into this church with a lot of baggage, and in many ways I've gotten rid of that baggage, and in some ways I've collected more baggage. But I've never really felt like I belonged anywhere before I found the UU Church. We are a religiously liberal community, and my beliefs here have never been ridiculed or put down. That is how I know this is where I belong. Why do I consider myself a liberal now? Well, for one, I believe in the inherent worth of all people, regardless of who they are or where they came from. I think I began to feel this way during my relationship with my New York boyfriend. He and I had many friends from many different backgrounds, and he and his family were very compassionate. My best friend was a Jewish lady who taught me that other religious points of view were not bad just because they weren't mine. I also believe that a woman does not require a man to make her whole, and that the education of women and minorities is the key to overcoming life's obstacles. After I moved here, I went on to complete first my associate's degree, then my bachelor's, and I am currently working on my master's degree. I took my very first professional job in November of last year, and even though it is considered big business, the people within that business are just people with the same wants and needs. The people who work on the production floor of my business are treated with no less respect and dignity than the people in the office. Most of the people I work closely with are liberals, and I am exposed to their beliefs and views daily, and I agree with most of them. It is great to finally be free from my conservative past and just be my own person. A person who sees that I would not be the person I am today had I not had the chance to live on both sides of the political fence.